This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
So when we read the communique, we must again affirm that a government must have legitimacy, and legitimacy is constitutional legitimacy. So the communique simply affirmed the fact that President Elek Barrow has external legitimacy.
That was Khalifa Salah, spokesperson of the Gambian Opposition Coalition, reacting to a statement from the ECOWAS on the presidential election. Details coming up.
Also, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump will be formally elected by the Electoral College today, barring any unforeseen circumstances. And cities are tense throughout the DRC as President Joseph Kabila's term comes to an official end at midnight.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, although Donald Trump is the U.S. president-elect, he is yet to be formally elected by the Electoral College. That will happen today, barring unforeseen circumstances. The Electoral College was established by America's founding fathers in 1787 in what is described as a compromise between the election of the president by Congress and the popular vote of citizens. The Electoral College is not a place, but rather a process. Each of the 50 U.S. states has a certain number of electoral votes. The Electoral College has 538 electors. To win the U.S. presidency, a candidate needs at least 270. Those electoral votes are being cast today around the U.S. The winner of the popular vote does not necessarily win in the Electoral College. In fact, in the most recent election, Hillary Clinton won nearly 3 million more of the popular vote than Donald Trump. But Clinton failed to win some of the states with large numbers of electoral votes. A similar situation occurred in 2000 when Al Gore won the popular vote but lost to George W. Bush. The rules may vary some state to state, but some electors could decide to switch who they vote for.
Illegal immigration was a signature theme during Donald Trump's presidential campaign. He promised supporters he would build a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border and deport the estimated 11 million immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. Now that Trump is president-elect, many undocumented immigrants fear he will make good on those promises and deport them, while some legal immigrants support his plan. VOA's Adam Phillips reports.
During his campaign, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump left little room for doubt about his policy intentions regarding the estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants now living in the U.S. Trump said this at a rally last fall.
For those here illegally today who are seeking legal status, they will have one route and one route only: to return home and apply for re-entry like everybody else. We will break the cycle of amnesty and illegal immigration.
This rhetoric struck a chord for attorney Anand Ahuja, co-founder of Indian Americans for Trump. He waited 9 years in India to be permitted to enter the U.S. legally and become a citizen. He resents those who come to the U.S. through what he calls the back door and who then get to stay on.
Somebody has entered into this country illegally, has broken the laws. They all should be deported.
Cab driver Mamadou Ouattara came to the U.S. from the Ivory Coast 16 years ago. Today, he is a U.S. citizen. While Ouattara considers himself grateful to be an American, he fears for his friends in New York's African diaspora. Many lack any immigration documents at all.
They have to hide to work because they have family, wife, children. So what they're going to do? So they have to hide themselves, do some job in some type of darkness and get underpay. They don't have any choice. The policy I saw during the campaign, I'm really scared.
Sion Girma is an Ethiopian-American immigration attorney with the African Services Committee in Harlem. Recently, she has noticed a change in what she calls the emotional temperature among her clients.
Particularly for the black immigrants that we serve, the realities of being black, which is, you know, experiencing discrimination in various forms, the multiple stresses that impact their mental well-being is now being compounded with the realities of being an immigrant in a very, like, anti-immigrant moment and political environment in the U.S. Particularly for African immigrants coming from majority Muslim nations, they're dealing now with the additional pressures of worrying about increased enforcement and expansion of mass deportation and detention. So we try as much as possible not to generate more fear, but to try to think of solutions, new pathways.
The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, or DACA program, which President Obama authorized in 2012, was one potential pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. It offered renewable two-year work visas and protection from deportation to people who were under 16 when their undocumented parents came to the U.S. These are tough times for DACA recipient Francis Mati.
We don't know what to expect from the new incoming president, but we do know that throughout his campaign, he several times said that he would end all the immigration executive actions that President Obama made. At the same time, we're going to fight back because we know this is our country.
Trump supporter Anan Ahuja disagrees. He says that legally speaking, this is not Mati's country any more than it is her parents' country.
If your parents have done something good, you are rewarded because your parents have done something good. Same way, if your parents have done something wrong, then you have to inherit that wrong also.
When Donald Trump assumes the presidency January 20th, he will have many choices concerning how far and how quickly he wishes to enact his campaign promises to get tough on illegal immigrants by rounding up and deporting them. Experts do agree such a move poses both logistical and constitutional challenges. However, this much is sure. His election represents a wake-up call for any immigrant who wishes to fulfill the American dream without the vetting, blessing, and the necessary paperwork of the United States government. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Throughout the Democratic Republic of Congo, cities are tense as President Joseph Kabila's term comes to an official end at midnight. In the absence of a new election, Kabila has chosen not to step down. Security forces have been deployed all over the country to neutralize efforts to protest the president's decision. William Clowes has an update from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa.
Il a eu mandat de 10 ans et c'est la fin de la récréation.
Flanked by his friends, a young man called Theo says President Kabila has had a mandate of 10 years, but now it's time to stop playing around. They shout anti-Kabila slogans and wave red cards, signaling that Kabila must leave power at midnight on Monday, December 19th. For months, Congo's people and the international community have watched nervously as the end of Kabila's second term drew near. 2 weeks ago, Maman Sidiku, the head of the United Nations delegation in the DRC, warned of the possibility of serious explosions of political violence. On Monday, however, Congolese cities were mainly calm. In the preceding day, security forces had been deployed in large numbers. In Kinshasa, political protest has been banned since September, and thousands of heavily armed police and soldiers, as well as armored vehicles, are visible on the streets. They operate roadblocks at night and have designated as illegal all gatherings of more than 10 people. Last week, General Celestin Kanyama, the Kinshasa chief of police, who was recently sanctioned by the US and European Union for his role in alleged human rights abuses, appeared on state television, waving his baton and instructing the population to trust their police force. The streets of the Congolese capital were much quieter than usual on Monday, and most businesses chose not to open. Police carried out arrests in some quarters of the city, and clashes did occur at the University of Kinshasa, after security forces blocked access to and from the university. VOA saw trucks of military reinforcements travelling towards the university. A police spokesman said that security forces had dispersed a group of delinquents armed with cans of gasoline and had successfully pushed the students back to their dorm rooms. Reached by phone, a student said that they had thrown stones at the soldiers and police while chanting anti-Kabila slogans. Both he and others around the university told VOA that the real resistance will begin at midnight on Monday, the moment the president becomes illegitimate in their eyes. As of 3 p.m. on Monday afternoon, the residence of Frank Diongo, a senior opposition politician, was surrounded by the Republican Guard, an elite military unit, who were attempting to take him into custody. The situation is similar in most other large Congolese cities, a heavy security presence and no significant protests so far, but some arrests. The exception is Butembo, in the province of North Kivu, where early in the morning a local armed group attacked the Congolese army and UN peacekeepers. Local media have reported that 5 militia members and 1 peacekeeper were killed. Congolese authorities expect to see more serious efforts at popular mobilization on Tuesday, December 20th. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiyi Swuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump will be formally elected by the Electoral College today, barring any unforeseen circumstances. And cities are tense throughout the DRC as President Joseph Kabila's term comes to an official end at midnight. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Opposition parties in the Gambia say they welcome news from Saturday's ECOWAS summit. Leaders met on the political situation in the Gambia, where the longtime ruler has refused to accept the results of this month's election. Reporter Madu Juf has more on the story from Banjul.
The Gambia's hardline ruler for 22 years, Yahya Jammeh, initially conceded defeat to opposition leader Adama Barrow in the December 1st presidential elections. And in an incredible turn of events, he rejected the results and vowed to challenge them in court. But West African heads of states met in Abuja last Saturday and decided that Mr. Jammeh must leave office and that Mr. Barrow must be sworn in on January 19. They have also pledged to attend the inauguration. At the end of the summit in Abuja, ECOWAS chairperson Ellen Johnson Sirleaf urged Mr. Jammeh to ensure a peaceful transfer of power to the president-elect.
The authority calls on President Yahya Jammeh to accept the results of the polls and refrain from any action likely to compromise the transition and peaceful transfer of power to the president-elect.
The sub-regional economic bloc agreed to uphold the results of the December 1st election that the government and the coalition parties saw restrained to preserve national unity and to respect the will of the Gambian people as expressed by the election results. Mr. Halifa Salah, a spokesperson of the opposition coalition, agreed.
So when we read the communique, we must again affirm that a government must have legitimacy, and legitimacy is constitutional legitimacy. So the communique simply affirmed the fact that President-elect Barrow has external legitimacy, and that is why we welcome it.
At the request of Mr. Barrow, who is currently guarded by unarmed private security personnel, ECOWAS leaders also agreed to guarantee the safety and protection of the president-elect. Mr. Salah explains.
This was a request by President-elect Barrow that he is president-elect, but is not getting the type of security that he deserves. And what they are saying is that they will be working on that, meaning that in their mediation, they should be able to ensure that he receives adequate security.
While Mr. Jammeh's rejection of the result may have thrown the newly elected president off track in his attempt to form a new government, preparations for his inauguration are ongoing, according to spokesperson Mr. Salah.
Executive power is exercised by the president-elect who should appoint those people who ultimately will also become the cabinet, the ministers in the cabinet. Well, he is working on that, but he has not made any pronouncements. There is a committee working on the inauguration, and I'm sure that they'll be making public advertisements and statements so that people will know exactly what is transpiring.
Ordinary Gambians continue to fear political violence, so Jammeh refused to step down on January 19, and that he may call for military action as a last resort in some quarters. This shopkeeper in the town of Serekunda says she fears Jammeh will have to be forced out of office.
I am happy that ECOWAS is supporting President Barrow. This will give strength and confidence to majority of the people who think that Jammeh must go peacefully. I am still afraid that there could be conflict because I just don't think that Jammeh will leave office so easily.
But Gambian freelance journalist Babukar Sise, who is currently covering the crisis, spoke on behalf of Gambians.
Gambians do not deserve any sort of violence in the country because Gambian people have spoken. I feel the president himself should not actually wait that to happen in our country that has been known for its hospitality of its people particularly. And I think it is high time for him to assure the whole world of peaceful and a smooth transition.
For VOA, this is Modi Juf reporting from Banjul, The Gambia.
Much of the reporting on events in The Gambia, outside of the country, among those who have been covering Jammeh's rule, is Pandere Mbai, founder and managing editor of the online publication Freedom Newspaper. The newspaper is based in Raleigh, North Carolina. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
Gambia, for the longest, has been ruled by a dictator. For over 22 years, Jammeh has been in power. The political change has been welcome across the country, within and outside the Gambia, but people should be cautious. Here is a guy who is very unpredictable. Initially, he conceded defeat, only to reverse his decision. As we speak, he's trying to challenge the results through the Supreme Court. We hope at the end of the day, Jammeh will reconsider and allow Mr. Barrow to take charge of that country.
Now, how long has your online newspaper been in business, and have you been critical of Jammeh for most of that time?
We've been in business since 2006, Joe. Over the years, we succeeded in exposing the tyranny, the corruption, the dictatorship in Gambia. When we started, some people were very dismissive. They were somehow apprehensive about what we were reporting. It turns out that all what we've been saying about Jammeh represents the truth and nothing but the truth.
Now, I should mention for the sake of disclosure that you were a reporter for The Voice of America going back about 12 years.
That's very correct, Joe. That's very correct. In fact, I was really excited when I saw your message via Facebook. You used to be my managing editor back in Gambia when I was in Gambia. I also reported for the VOA. That's correct.
So what are you hearing from your sources in the Gambia as to the political situation? Are people confident that this will be resolved, or do they fear any kind of violence?
Yeah, people are very hopeful. Gambians are generally very peaceful people. They're not into violence, even though Jammeh is trying to provoke them to take to the streets. The leaders of the transition, they're very focused. They're calling on their supporters to be calm and respect the rule of law. As you may know, Joe, there was a meeting held during the weekend in Nigeria, and the leaders of ECOWAS agreed that Jammeh should hand over power to President-elect Adama Barrow. So there is this growing hope that by January 19, Mr. Barrow will assume the presidency. And as we speak, we receive information that President Jammeh might consider probably settling somewhere in Saudi Arabia or most likely in Morocco. His wife originated from Morocco, so there are reports that he's trying to plan his exit route as soon as possible to end the political impasse.
Now, will your online newspaper keep a close watch on him as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, since his electoral victory, we've been receiving a lot of feedback from his supporters. All they've been saying is that, okay, we hope Freedom Newspaper will continue with the critical reporting, with fair and balanced reporting. We hope you will not take up any appointment in the new government. Well, I told them that I'm not interested in getting any form of appointment from the new government. We are doing this in the interest of the country and to report the truth. Our job is to serve as watchdog to police the government, to ensure that there is accountability, there is transparency and justice in the Gambia. We also hope that President-elect Barrow and his team will empower the media. The media is an important component of any democratic dispensation. Now, once they start meddling with the media or trying to suppress the media, Joe, that will create problems down the road. That's what led to Jammeh's fall today. In the Gambia, the truth has been suppressed. The local press cannot report issues, and that gives credence to the Freedom newspaper.
That's Bandere Mbai, founder and managing editor of the online publication Freedom Newspaper, based in the U.S. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
Zimbabwe's ruling party on Saturday endorsed President Robert Mugabe for another term as president in 2018. The 92-year-old Mr. Mugabe has been in power since 1980, when white minority rule ended. His 2013 re-election was marred by claims of voting irregularities. Opposition parties have been unable to mount a significant challenge to the ruling ZANU-PF.
Despite Western military and counterterrorism efforts, terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State have produced dozens of franchises in the Middle East and in North and Sub-Saharan Africa. Experts from different U.S. think tanks are raising concern about the continued threat and are offering recommendations for the new U.S. administration to deal with it. Mohammed El-Shenawi has the details.
Experts warn that the Islamic State group's recent loss of territory in Syria, Libya, and Iraq may not undermine its appeal. They also note that Al-Qaeda is seeking to reclaim its dominance and has a potential to be a greater threat than ISIS. Robin Wright is a fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace.
Extremism has evolved traumatically and dramatically since 9/11. Movements, leaders, tactics, strategies, and theaters of operation have all proliferated in ways that were unimagined in 2001.
Wright says while the United States alone had spent trillions of dollars on homeland security, diplomacy, and the military to try to counter violent extremism, the threat endures. She pointed out that 25% of the new wave of violent extremists are coming from North Africa. Frederick Wery, a fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, argues that they are expanding into new areas by exploiting changing political and socioeconomic conditions.
Where there's a locale that falls between two certain political blocks, whether Mosul, whether Sinai, northern Nigeria. I mean, these are the real areas of growth for the affiliates.
Wery is especially concerned about Al-Qaeda's strategy of forming alliances with different militias and insurgents. He points out that many of the leaders of terror groups have come from Egypt. Wery says the new U.S. administration should pay attention to the example of Sinai, where a local insurgency was hijacked by a transnational terrorist group. Wery says Egyptian President al-Sisi's military approach in dealing with this threat is counterproductive.
You know, terrorism is ultimately and fundamentally a political, you know, strategy. So counterterrorism has to be connected to politics. And in that sense, our strategy in the region, the strategy of the incoming administration, has to be connected to regional realities. And this is a region that's collapsing on itself. Four civil wars, collapsed states, a shrinking space for civil society.
Experts also warn the new administration against sweeping negative statements about Islam, as it only serves the terrorist group's rhetoric that the United States is at war with Islam. Mohammed El-Shenawi, VOA, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Music Mix.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.